In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Kiss excellence.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Moe.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome in to a little Sunday morning edition of the Sports Hour.
Yeah.
It's not Sunday morning for you listening to it, but it is Sunday morning for Mitch and I. As we record this pod, you know, usually we do this like late afternoon, evening, after a work day. Got, you know, be high. Like, this is it's a little different vibe when we record in the morning. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, I was planning to go a lot longer there on the whoa, and I just don't have that lung capacity yet. Waking up literally an hour and a half ago, yeah. I woke up and was like, oh shit, I still got to do all my notes. Oh, I got to get up.
Listen,
get moving.
Listen, you just haven't had enough coffee yet. Enough coffee.
I haven't.
You gotta drink your coffee.
Had enough coffee.
Yeah, and then you'll be good.
Yeah, coffee. Put on my khakis. Yeah.
Now this is a Boston podcast. Look at that, guys. Well, welcome in. And today, Mitch, what do we got? What do we got in store today? Huh?
Oh man, we got quite a bit going on this morning. We got some news. We got some big news. We're gonna talk about. We got the start of baseball, guys. Baseball's back. We're gonna start about their new playoff format for this 2020 season, and some of the rule changes they're making. And then we're also going to give our favorites and surprises out of each league going in to the restart of baseball. We've got a forgotten all-star for you, so we'll continue our little game that we play, like to play here in the Sports Hour. And then we'll get into our NBA awards predictions. NBA will be restarting I believe next week, so we'll be getting into our awards predictions and how who we think is going to fall where. So
yeah, wow, what a lineup!
Great lineup.
What a show we've put together. No, just kidding. No, it'll be fun. Because Mitch, we for the first time in 4 months. Almost 5 months. We actually have live sports to talk about here on this little sports podcast that we do.
That's right.
So
I can't believe it. It's fun.
So that's like a big win for everybody, and including us. And so, yeah, I mean, we sat down, watched some baseball Thursday night, opening day of baseball, which was just so much fun to watch my Dodgers again crush pitiful San Francisco Giants team. It's America's pastime right there. Like, that's what the founding fathers would want. So it's
what the founding fathers would
want. Yeah, it was a good time. Absolutely. It was a good time. And I'm excited to kind of dig into this. And then, as you said, NBA starting up on Thursday here. So we're feeling good. Things are moving in a positive direction. Positive for the sports
Dude,
world.
We're thriving right now. We're thriving.
I don't know about thriving. 2020 is still
baseball's
a shit
back,
show,
baby.
But we are surviving. I'll say that.
Where things are getting better. Things are getting better.
100%. 100%. All right, Mitch. Shall we do some news?
Oh, can I do this? This has been a while since I did this. Let me warm up. me. Let's get into the news.
Wow, not even
oh,
rusty,
boy.
Huh?
I was pretty rusty.
No, I,
was
no, poor I thought, you know, I thought it was pretty good. I'm impressed.
I appreciate that. Thanks, I appreciate that. It'll be better next time, I promise.
Not bad for
not
10
bad
a.m. Pacific
I feel
time.
Like a pitcher just coming off Tommy John. Like, you're not great right out of the gate, but...
Did you just compare yourself to a pitcher coming off Tommy John surgery?
It's been a while since you've been out there, you know? Things aren't going to be as sharp. You had some things to work on, but you'll get there. You just got to put the work in a little.
You just need a rehab stint down in Double A to kind of like loosen you up.
I need
up,
a
you know?
Rehab stint, yeah. I need to open up an inferior podcast, right. Somehow inferior, yeah, podcast. Exactly. I don't know how we get more inferior.
Right. But. I was just thinking, how do we find one? I'm not sure if they exist. good times, so. Mitch. Well done. Well done. Yes, news, guys. News for the first time in what seems like forever. Let's start this off, Mitch. In the NFL yesterday, Saturday the 25th, news coming out of the league. Jamal Adams, who has been so vocal about his contract situation with the Jets, about the future of the Jets, saying earlier this week, Adam Gase is not the right leader for the team. Big deal. Gets traded to the Seattle Seahawks, and the haul that they got in return for him, Mitch, is impressive. Bradley McDougal, young safety, first round pick in 2021 and 2022, and a third in 21 in exchange for Jamal Adams and a fourth round pick in 2022. This is, this is a blockbuster trade. We're talking about a young all pro safety moving on to the Northwest. Mitch, what are your thoughts?
I mean, the Jets, I think, win this trade. I think the Jets win this trade. I mean, this is a team that is, look, I mean, obviously the Seattle Seahawks, they get Jamal Adams, a game-changing safety. But the Jets also get a pretty good young piece in Bradley McDougal, and this is a team that's looking to build right now. And if you get two first-round picks and a third round, one of those first and the third you actually get to use in next year's draft, with a draft class that's coming in, it looks like it's going to be pretty solid. This looks like a good win for the New York Jets and actually a good move. You kind of get a guy that's kind of been, I wouldn't say cancerous to the culture there, but obviously he's not promoting a positive culture in New York, which is something that New York needs right now, especially the Jets organization. They need a positive culture there. Offload that guy, bring in a young piece, plus the draft picks. I think the Jets actually win this trade.
Wow. Here's the thing. Did they get a good return for the player that they gave up? I believe so. Two firsts and a third and a player. That's a fair haul. But it is automatically a loss when you can't hold on to a top 10 pick that you drafted before you gave them their second contract. He's an all-pro safety, and I don't care what state your team is in, whether you're contending or rebuilding, any team can use a young all-pro defensive piece in the secondary. The Jets could absolutely use Jamal Adams, even if they're rebuilding, even if they need more talent on the team. You don't let that kind of talent go. He's the best player on the team. The Jets just lost their best player. So that's not a win for me, Mitch. I understand that the haul is fair for what they got, and it may be even good. And maybe, they come out of it. But, like, in the end, you still lost a young star player who could have been a franchise piece for a decade. And so that is a big L for me.
I think it is a win because you can't use a guy that doesn't want to be there. If the guy doesn't want to be there, he's not going to be that much use to you because he's – that's just a fact. If the guy doesn't want to be there, he's not going to be much use to you. We see that with players in the past where they don't want to be there and they nurse injuries and they sit out a little bit longer and they hold out on contracts and they just cause a headache for an organization. I think the Jets are dodging a potential headache here. And Jamal Adams still gets to go to a competitive team, and good for him. But I think the Jets dodge a bullet here in a major headache with Jamal Adams, right, and get a good haul in return.
Right, but Jamal Adams doesn't want to play for the Jets because of the Jets. It's not like Jamal Adams woke up one day and decided, you know what, like, I don't want to be on this team anymore. They have sucked, and they've continually sucked, and they've strung along with a contract, and he's seen the losing culture.
So how would you be able to use a guy that doesn't want to be there?
Right, but how is that a win for you when your culture drives away your best player and you get a couple first in return and you're like, yeah, we won. That was great. No, that's a huge loss. You could write that. You should have kept that player.
No, but you could write that. You could write that narrative. That's a narrative that you could follow, but you could also follow the narrative of that it's trying to be a culture change. And so maybe he wasn't all that helpful to the culture there. And maybe you have to, maybe there's some changes that need to be made to in order to improve that.
Are you suggesting that Jamal Adams is the reason why they suck?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. That seems like a very gross oversimplification of what I just said.
I'm just trying to rile you up. Yeah. It's early. I'm just trying to throw jabs.
It's early. Give me another 30 minutes and I'll get up there. No, that's a very that is a very gross oversimplification of what I just said. Actually, I don't think Jamal Adams is the reason they suck. I'm saying that maybe there are some things behind the scenes that maybe he contributes to the poor culture that they're trying to change. And if you can offload a guy, I know he's talented, but he doesn't want to be there.
Right, but it's your fault he doesn't want to be there. So how is that a win? That's like you being a toxic boyfriend, right? And then your girlfriend, like, demands to leave and she leaves you. And you're like, yeah, that's a win because, like, I don't need her anyway. Like, you're the one who pushed her away, right? So, like, how is that a win for you if she leaves? Like, ultimately, it's the Jets' fault that Jamal Adams doesn't want to be there. And if you draft a guy at the sixth overall pick in, what, 2016? And you can't keep him on your team? He's an all-pro safety? And you can't keep him on your team because you suck so bad and you have such a losing culture and a mismanagement of players? It's a history with the Jets. It's not like this is new. I mean, we know what the last few years have been for them. So, like, for me, this is just a clear sign that the Jets are in a downward spiral. It sucks for Sam Darnold. I'm really high on Sam Darnold. I really want to root for the kid. I think he's talented, but he is not going to be successful in this Jets organization. He is set up for failure. And it sucks because his career is going to go by the wayside, and he's not going to get another shot because he was on a horrible organization that could not win games and could not put a competitive team around him and couldn't keep players, good players, on their team. So I don't know, Mitch. I understand, like I said, I agree, the haul is good. Two firsts, a third, a player for Jamal Adams. That's fair, and that may be good. And they, in theory, it could be a win for them. But with the way that they've handled their players in the past, along with, you know, some good drafting recently, but also some hit or miss there, I don't know if that's the best case scenario.
Sure. You can go with that narrative. I'm going with the business side of the deal. Jets get the better end of the deal.
Sure.
By the way, do we know what the Jets' record was last year? Fun fact.
No, I'm
without looking
my
it
head.
Up.
Nope.
Without looking like up, they were 7-9 still.
7-9.
They were 7-9. They were 7-9.
Are we sure about that?
So,
do we fact check
that?
Somebody get a
fact check it. Fact check.
That's
me.
Incredible. Wow.
Yeah, this team won a lot of terrible games. So, look, business-wise, Jets win the trade. Sure, you can write the narrative of the culture thing, and I think you have a valid point. Jets win this deal in my mind.
All right.
From a business standpoint. So
fair enough. Mitch, let's go over to a sport we don't talk about a ton. Ice hockey. You know, good old Canadian pastime in the NHL. Mitch, we've been excited about this for a minute. Seattle getting a hockey franchise. And you and I starting to try to dabble into hockey a little bit, right? Exciting. We both like Seattle. Want to root for a team. But now the team has a new name. And boy, is it incredible. The Seattle Kraken, Mitch.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
The Kraken.
It's a 10 out of 10. Hashtag release the Kraken.
Hashtag release the Kraken.
Let's go. I mean, they nailed it.
I think they did. I think the only name better that they could have gone with was Pilots. I think that's the only name better. But I have an affinity for that name.
You're a traditionalist.
It's a great name
for
a Seattle team.
But I mean,
Seattle team.
Kraken, mythical creatures.
I know, Kraken's badass.
Listen,
Kraken is badass.
Mythical creatures win 100% of the time.
Okay, so what's your favorite part about this jersey? Because mine has to be the Space Needle anchor.
Yeah, the anchor, the secondary logo, that tough-looking anchor is great. I love the color scheme,
but it's
too.
The Space Needle. But it's the Space Needle in the middle.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I think it's fantastic, and I love the color scheme. It feels Seattle, but it's different. It's like a different green and blue. It's not just like they stole from, you know, somebody
icy
else.
Blue.
It's similar to the Mariners, but it's different enough that it felt unique, which I liked. I liked a lot.
Yeah, I wish they would have done a little bit better with the S, the primary logo. I would have liked actually the anchor to be the primary. I think would have looked a lot better. But.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the S is a throwback to the old Seattle hockey team that was the first team in the U.S. to win the Stanley Cup back in 1920 something.
Yeah.
So I think that was the Metropolitans, and they had a logo that was like a Seattle S, and so I think it's supposed to be like sort of a throwback to that. So I enjoyed that it felt new and fresh, but it also had throwbacks to the, you know, to the city, to the history of hockey in Seattle. I thought it was a win overall. So fantastic for the Seattle Krakens, who will be playing in the Climate Pledge Arena, which is the refurbished, renewed key arena down there in downtown Seattle. So very exciting for them. Excited to see them on the ice. You know what I mean? Do I sound like we talk about hockey a lot?
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, offsides and
checking.
Oh,
they're
checking
just scooting around on those,
all that stuff.
On those skates. Just.
I mean, now I have to be a hockey fan. I mean, now I feel obligated because now I'm a hot. Like now I have to be a hockey fan. I might have to be a Seattle Kraken fan.
Oh yeah, no, I just might have to. I'm with it now. Like I want the gear. Like I want a beanie with that like anchor logo on it.
See, because like in Northern California, I just don't feel the connection to Southern California, right? So like
you could root for the Sharks. Come on, man.
I could root for the Sharks, but like that feels like a front runner thing to do. Like they're good a lot. So like I don't want to feel like a front runner, so I feel like I got to pick someone else. I might have an opportunity here to be a Seattle Kraken fan.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are in a place in hockey where, you know, as a kid I went to a lot of Sharks games. I guess I kind of always, if I had to root for a team, it would have been the Sharks, but I mean, I don't care about hockey that much, so yeah, I feel like I am ready to adopt the Seattle Kraken as my hockey team. It's exciting.
I think we don't agree on anything almost in sports, so like we should just adopt this team as our own.
The official team of the Sports Hour.
Of the Sports Hour, yeah. I love Michael Keaton. That's a good one.
That's great. Okay, Seattle Kraken it is. Shout out to the Kraken. Look forward to sending them relentless emails to get players and coaches on the podcast with us as we transition this into a full Seattle Kraken hockey podcast. So,
yes,
exciting times. Mitch, let's talk about another one of maybe not our favorite teams, but my favorite team, the Los Angeles Doyers. They traded for a talented young player earlier this year, guy by the name of Mookie Betts. And then they signed him to an extension, a big time, big money extension, 12 years, $365 million for the former MVP from Boston. He's playing on a one-year $27 million deal right now, which means that the total contract for him with the Dodgers, 13 years. I'm ready for the Dodgers to win World Series for the next decade. I'm just ready for the future. It's fantastic. It's looking bright here in LA. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they have to not choke in the playoffs is what it is. I mean, they and the offense has never been an issue. It's been the pitching for them, right? The pitching has collapsed down the stretch for them. But locking down a guy like Mookie Betts has been a fantastic add. This is one of those type of guys you have to lock down long term. I was worried there for a minute after they made that trade and that he was going to be pretty much under a 1 year contract with the Dodgers, a show me type of year where he might enter free agency and go out and go get that fat contract. I was worried for a second there. I was like, oh man, this is really going to suck. The Dodgers are going to make this deal for a guy that they're going to have a 60-game rental on. So good on the Dodgers for going out and getting this deal done. Mookie Betts deserves it. This is one of the top players in the game. And you've just locked up one of the better leadoff hitters, one of the better outfielders, one of the better defensive players in the league for the next 12 years, 13 years.
Yeah, no, it's a big win, and it's interesting because the Dodgers have been pursuing a big-time free agent for a couple years, right? I mean, they even brought in a guy like Manny Machado a couple years ago, you know, kind of gave that a look. Ultimately, he doesn't go. They made a run at Bryce Harper. They made a run at Garrett Cole in this free agency. They made a run at a lot of guys. Anthony Rendon. And ultimately, they end up with Mookie Betts.
Why'd you say
his name
like that?
I don't know. It kind of felt fun.
Okay.
A little flair. Yeah, like keep people on their toes. He could be.
I'm not assuming. I'm just saying. I've never heard his name said like that. So,
Mitch, I'm just trying. I'm just freestyling, man. I'm just, you know, we're just trying to do things
you
as
do
we
you,
go.
Baby.
All right. I just feel like I'm being judged
you, baby.
Now. That's you know?
No,
because of my flair.
Go for it. Go for it, child.
You don't like my flair?
No, it's spicy.
I'm a peacock. You gotta let me fly.
I'll let you fly, dude. Just fucking go. Let's go.
Okay. All right. But yeah, Dodgers get their guy. And this is a guy that Friedman has really wanted. And ultimately they sign him to the extension. And as you said, the combination of Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger is all time. It's the best pairing of young superstars in all of baseball. I don't screw the Yankees. I don't care what you want to say about them. This is the best pairing of two superstars in all of baseball. And these guys are young and they're going to be here for a really long time. And you mentioned pitching, Mitch. And when I'm watching opening day and I'm watching my kid, my guy, my boy, Dustin May, AKA Ginger Guard on the mound. And I'm thinking, man, we've got Walker Buehler and this kid, like, still young, lot of potential. Walker Buehler might be a Cy Young candidate this year already. Who knows what Dustin May will look like in 60 games with a real shot? Like, the Dodgers are in such a good spot. They are, I don't know, man, I'm just gushing about my favorite team, but they're so, if we don't win it this year, though, Mitch, I said this, I tweeted this out, I told my wife, she said she told me to it, if the Dodgers don't win the World Series this year, I'm quitting baseball and I'm never watching again. I 100% give up. Because there's no reason that in 60 games, in a year where there's so much questions and there are zero questions about the Los Angeles Dodgers and their ability to play baseball and win games, in any year, there has never been a greater opportunity for the Dodgers to finally break through and win that World Series that we have longed for 30 years. If we don't do it, I'm done. What is there to, like, it's just never going to happen. You know, if it doesn't happen, it's never going to happen. So I'll be content just switching to hockey.
You're such a crybaby. Oh, 30 years. I can't wait any longer. Dude, come on, stop it. You're such a crybaby. Look, I mean, yeah, there is no reason why the Dodgers shouldn't be top contenders. I mean, if you see them slip under 500 or close to 500, that's going to be a disappointment. There is no reason that this team shouldn't be one of the favorites in the NL and shouldn't be one of the top seeds in the NFL MLB. MLB. Sorry, I'm getting excited for football. There's no reason that they shouldn't be one of the top seeds in the MLB with this new format of playoffs that we have going on. So the opportunities and the possibilities are endless for the Dodgers. They just have to capitalize now. And they locked up their guy. By the way, you said the best pairing of young stars in baseball is Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger.
Yep.
You should do a triple of that because I think Corey Seager is still going to be – I mean,
yeah,
it's the best. It's the best triple up of stars.
I mean, listen, the roster is just—it's just tough, man. I was watching Monday night or Thursday night when they're playing opening night against the Giants, and the lineup, Mitch. I'm like, Austin Barnes is the only finally, I get a break.
But like, he's not even that
bad.
He's
not a
scrub,
but like that's...
He's no scrub
He's
either,
the
though.
Nine hitter, and he's the like,
he's a,
finally, I've got a break after you went through Muncy, Betts, Turner, Bellinger, Peterson, Seager, Taylor.
But even,
you know, it's incredible.
But even Barnes, you don't. But even Barnes, you don't want to run on because he's such a defensive guy.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah,
no doubt.
I don't have to pitch to him, but holy crap, I got to deal with him on when we're on offense because he's a defensive mastermind.
Yeah.
So
no, it's incredible their lineup, and obviously, like you said, pitching the key, but they're just so set up this year. And Mookie Betts, I'm glad the Dodgers got this done before the season. Leave no doubt in the mind of fans and in Mookie and the team that he's here to stay. He's the guy we wanted. He's the guy we got. And he's the guy we think is going to put us over the edge. And I really believe that he can. I really believe that. I mean, this was a 106 win team last year. And they basically the exact same, except for more experienced. And they have an AL MVP on the roster.
Well, and here's the deal, Dallin. I don't want you to. You know what? I'm going to take back a lot of what I said. I don't want to hear you complain if they don't win the World Series with their young stars, because at least you have the money to pay them so that they can stay there when the A's have young stars like Matt Chapman and Matt Olson. We can't even pay them to come back. So I don't want to hear it out of you.
That's fair.
I don't want to hear it out of you because at least you can afford them. We can't afford our stars once they get to that prime level.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I hate to see it. What can you do?
We have to take advantage when they're still learning how to take advantage of the pro game. That's when we have to take advantage and go win championships. And we haven't done that since 1989.
Yeah, I think that's why.
And the market's completely different. The market's completely different than it was in 89.
Mitch, I think that's why it hurts so bad. Because it's like if any team had the resources and the money and the finances to be able to win a World Series every single year, it would be the Dodgers. And somehow they just have failed to do it. It's like
that's why
no
I don't
want to
hear it out of you. Because you always have the resources.
Right, there's no excuse to not win it. That's why I'm saying if they don't, I'm done. Because there's no excuse.
No, you're not done. I don't want
to
hear it out of
you. Okay, Mitch.
Because you can always just build another team. We can't do that.
And then lose in the NLCS. Yeah, it's exactly.
Oh, you're making it to NLCSs. That's outstanding.
Shut up, Mitch. I'm greedy. Okay.
You're a whiny little baby is what you are.
I want a World Series.
You're a baby.
All right.
Grow up.
Let's just keep talking baseball here. We're gonna transition to baseball here out of the news. The beginning of the MLB season and a couple changes we wanted to talk about that we are very excited about. One is the expanded playoffs. So typically there are 10 teams from the major leagues that make the playoffs every year, 5 out of the AL, 5 out of the NL, division winners, and then 2 wild cards. But because of the shortened season, the unprecedented nature, and honestly, I think a lot of it too is motivation for players and teams to have a reason to come back and play for 2 months. Because that's a lot to ask these guys to get prepped and do everything for 2 months. And then, you know, and then a third of the league gets to go to the playoffs. So they expanded it out to 16 playoff teams, which means 8 from each league. The top 2 teams in each division now automatically get in, plus the next 2 best records as a wild card. First round matchups, 3-game series, and then it goes to the traditional setup. So the divisional round, you know, 5-game series, top 4 teams, and then 7-7. So, Mitch, I'm a big fan of the expansion. I think baseball should have expanded playoffs a while ago, and I'm glad they added the second wild card, but I think more could be done. I'm excited about this expansion and the ability to bring other teams into the playoff scenario in such a weird year, in a year where we really don't feel like we know what's going to happen. It just adds to the excitement and the possibilities by adding more teams.
Yeah, I think baseball is one of those games where teams can get really streaky in a good way or a bad way.
I mean, the Nationals are a great example of that last year.
Yeah, 19-31 through the first 2 months, and then they wind up winning the World Series last year. So they are, you know, baseball is one of those games where you can get super streaky in a good way or a bad way, and this opens up the opportunity for maybe a team that scooted in at that last playoff spot at maybe just above 500 or at 500. They're able to make a run through the playoffs. I think though that this won't stand as far as a long term thing. I think it was a smart move by them to do it in this shortened season. But I don't think this is something that's going to be a long term thing because baseball is such a traditionalist sport. I think that this would open up the opportunity for them to expand their playoffs even further, but I don't think 16 teams is something that we're going to see long term here.
Yeah, so what you think, like 12? Because I agree. I think 16 is a little drastic. To go from 10 to 16 is a very big gap. So I don't think they're going to permanently keep 16, but I think the feedback from teams and owners is going to say, listen, we like some extra playoff teams. And they'll find a compromise in the middle of maybe 12. And maybe you do it like the NFL did, where two teams get a bye, you play the first round, and then, you know, and then you go on to the next and you do it there. So you just add an extra round, you add an extra team. So it's not a ton, but, you know, the difference between 10 and 12, like, that's significant. There's a lot of teams year after year that are 85 plus wins and don't make the playoffs. And so you'd basically be adding a team like that, which I think is a win. So I think the expansion stays, but not the 16 teams that we'll see this year.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see the 16 teams. 12 would be plausible, but I think we see them go back to 10 before they expand any further than that. I think that's going to take some deliberation and maybe even a little bit of pushing back from the MLBPA on what, or, you know, of anyone that wants to see more playoff teams there. So
yeah, I think I just imagine the players being like, listen, this is great. Like, more of us get to participate in the playoffs. Like, more of us get a shot to make more money, to, you know, have a run of the play. Like, all those things are positive. I think players are just going to be like, listen, like, what are we doing? Like, let's just expand this. And then MLB will say, listen, we can't do the 16, but we'll give you an extra team each, you know, sort of thing as a compromise. I could definitely see a scenario like that, because what player doesn't want to make the playoffs? Of course, the players want the playoffs, I mean, expanded.
My only worry is that with 162 games, like, it's such a long season. At what point do we add enough playoff teams where making the playoffs becomes disingenuous? Like, it's almost like we won 80 games. We were 80-82, but we were, you know, that team that snuck into the last spot. I mean, at some point, it's got to become disingenuous to make the playoffs, and you almost make that playoffs as like almost, that last playoff spot is almost like a pity spot. And that's where I have a little bit of trouble with expansion. I do think they need to expand past 10. I think 12 is a good number. I think 12 is the right number. But I worry that expansion will lead to more expansion, and that playoffs then all of a sudden become disingenuous, and it loses that sanctity of getting into the playoffs and being a good team.
Sure, and I 100% agree, but I don't think 12 does that. I think 16 permanently might. I think 16 permanently might. When over half the league makes it, listen, the NBA does it. And I like the 16, but there are many cases where, you know, you look at even the bubble that's going to happen, you know, in the next week or so. I mean, in the East, there are many teams that are under 500 competing there, right, for a playoff spot. Ultimately, like, those teams, could you say they don't deserve it? Perhaps. But that's the NBA, and I think it's fine. But I don't necessarily want that in Major League Baseball. I do want more. So I think 12... maybe 14, but I don't think baseball would ever get to the point where 16 became a permanent fixture.
No, I just think that expansion obviously leads to more expansion. Yeah, you know,
in theory, yes.
In theory, I mean, we've seen it across history, even outside of sports, right? So, like, it becomes the sanctity of being in the playoffs then becomes almost like a rite of passage than it is something you earned, and that's something that that's something I worry about with this expansion thing. But for the shortened season, staying on track here, I like the 16 for this shortened season. It allows for more baseball, more games to be played, and we get to enjoy baseball a little bit more. So.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think ultimately too, when you're asking players and coaches to come back, you know, to take these time off, prep for the season, they were almost there, and then they had to cancel. I mean, they're in spring training when they cancel it. And then to come back and play 2 months and, you know, only a third of the league's going to make the playoffs and play for more than 60 days. That's a hard ask. And I can't imagine, you know, some of these players in the motivations and like how much are you really trying if you know you're like not really in that. Where like by expanding it, you've now given other players an opportunity. And I think you're going to make the play more competitive because of it. So I think it's a big win for baseball. Speaking of changes, let's talk about the DH as well. Because another unique thing about this season is that the universal DH in the NL, we now have the DH for the 2020 season. I absolutely love this. I don't know why this doesn't exist already in all the leagues. Give me universal DH all the time, 100%. Mitch, how do you feel?
I like the universal DH, and being an AL guy, I love having the DH. I think it adds a new offensive component and such in a sports world where everyone is about offense right now. And that thing in sports, you know, those phases in sports change where people are all about defense, people are about offense. We're in an offensive world right now where people want to see more offense. I love the classic baseball, and you know I'm a traditionalist.
Yes.
I love the classic baseball where you have an interleague matchup and depending on what stadium you're in, you have to adjust your lineups to make sure that you're putting your best lineup forward. If you're an AL team in an NL stadium or an NL team in an AL stadium. But I do like the universal DH, and I think this is something that that's been talked about for a long time in baseball, really since the adoption of the DH in the AL.
Right.
This has been something that's been talked about, what's that, since the 70s. So I love the adoption of the universal DH. I think this is going to be a good trial run, see how fans like it. And this is something I could see sticking around and staying. This is also going to open up opportunities for players in baseball to become more specialists. Whereas in baseball, more than any other sport, we've already seen players become more specialists. The lefty on lefty matchups.
Mm-hmm.
They took that away with the three out rule for relief pitchers. And now we're seeing it in base in the DH role, and now with pitchers where you don't have to take a guy because also yeah he's a great pitcher, but he also swings the bat pretty well. NL guys don't have to think about it anymore. This opens up a brand new position, the guy that could be specialized as the designated hitter, a guy that may be subpar on defense but has a great bat, gives him the opportunity to be looked at more by major league clubs. So I like it. I think it's going to be a good trial run. We'll see how this all pans out, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think fans will love it. And listen, there is something fun and quirky about the pitchers having to bat in the NL, right? It you know, there's nothing wrong with it, I don't think. I think it's an interesting sports thing. It's traditional. It's like it only happens in this league. It's kind of a quirky sports thing, which is fine. But ultimately, I think the universal DH is better. And you brought up a good point. This is something we talked about when the other day, just as we were, you know, hanging out talking about this, that the idea that now you can have a player come into the league as a DH. And you just couldn't have that before because half the league had one and half the league didn't. So you couldn't just bank your career on being the DH guy and hope that one of the 15 AL clubs was going to always sign you. That opportunity was always going to be there. That wasn't always the case. And there's guys who have made it work, have improved defensively.
Edgar Martinez.
You know, guys who have been able, you know, guys who are known as the DH guy. But now you've opened up, if you make it universal, you open up the possibility that a guy can just come in the draft and be like, yeah, I'm a DH. Like, this is what I do, you know? I'm just the power guy. I don't play very good defense, but I can just hit the crap out of the ball, and that's what I do. And that's a win when you're adding a job, essentially, a new archetype to the sport. I think that's an important factor in this that maybe people don't think about, but I think that's a big win for baseball.
I mean, if this had been adopted earlier, you think about the different career paths that maybe Edgar Martinez or David Ortiz would have had.
Yeah, exactly. It,
those guys that got brought up, Edgar was brought up as a third baseman, Poppy as a first baseman. You think about the different trajectory of those guys. Those guys may not have played in the AL their entire career had there been a universal DH and just realized like, hey, these guys are sub these guys are subpar defensive players, but man, they can swing a stick. So like, you know, maybe their career paths take different, you know, their careers take different paths.
Yeah. Had there been an opportunity to play DH in the NL full time, maybe those guys, like you said, yeah, maybe they look at a different club. Because maybe David Ortiz really wanted to play for the Braves, but just, you know, wanted to be able to DH more, and that opportunity wasn't there. So he stays, you know, I'm not saying that's true, but that opens up that opportunity.
I mean, he loved Boston, so
100%.
Yeah,
I mean, but dude,
so, like, he was probably going to stay
Boston,
in Boston.
But yeah. I'm saying the opportunity there now opens up, you know, the whole league to a player like that, which I think is a win. So I hope the Universal DH sticks past 2020, and you're in agreement there too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Definitely.
Mitch, before we wrap up baseball, I just want to give some thoughts on who we think is the favorite coming out of each of these leagues, the AL and the NL, and then a sleeper team, a surprise team, especially with this expanded playoff, that we think could make a run to, I'm going to say, the championship series. The AL and LCS, right? I'm not saying necessarily World Series, because there are some very top-heavy teams in these leagues.
Oh, I had my World Series picked. I had my World Series picked. So.
Oh, no, no. I'm talking about just for the surprise team. I'm saying that these like the teams that I picked for my surprise team are not teams I think could necessarily... I'm not saying they're going to win a World Series, but I'm saying they might surprise and get to an ALCS and LCS.
Okay.
But yes, I have like a World Series prediction as well.
Okay.
That's what you're talking about. So, all right. So, who are your favorites out of the? Let's start with the AL.
Well, my favorites out of the AL. I mean, gotta take the Yanks. I mean, this team is. It pains me to say it, but the Yankees are just a well put together baseball team. You add a big arm guy like Gerrit Cole at the top. Giancarlo Stanton has the stress of a long season lifted off of his shoulders, someone who's struggled playing 162 games over the course of his career. Now we're asking him to play 60. And who knows what that guy's going to be. I mean, we saw it on Thursday in that first game against the Nationals, man. That guy just looked like he was free swinging. He looked comfortable. He looked relaxed. The rest of that Yankees lineup is still really, really good. It pains me to say it, but I think the Yankees are probably the favorite out of the AL.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're talking too, like 60 regular game, you know, 60 season regular game. But even if you played every playoff team, we're talking 82 games, half a season. That would be the max. If you played out every round, you know, to its capacity, you're playing 82 games at the most. So yeah, guys with health issues or guys, you know, with endurance issues, this is a big win for them. Giancarlo Stanton looked really good opening day, looked relaxed. He hit that bomb and it was like, man, you add that to what is already an incredible lineup, and then, like you said, the addition of Gerrit Cole. I have the Yankees out of the AL as well as a clear favorite, I think. I think both leagues have a clear favorite, and other good teams in there, no doubt. I think the Astros, always a competitive team, always a talented team, even with the loss of Gerrit Cole. The Rays, another very good competitive team. I think there will be tough outs in the AL, but the favorite going into the season, no doubt in my mind, is the Yankees. Mitch, NL, what are your thoughts?
I mean, we got to take your boys.
Thank you.
The blue.
Thank you.
We got to take the Dodgers. I mean, look, I kind of ragged on them a little bit just a few minutes ago, but they are the favorites. I mean, this team is so well put together. And with all the young talent and the explosiveness that this team has, I mean, there is no reason why this team shouldn't be the favorite. You look across the rest of the NL, there aren't really teams that even compete or come close to becoming a favorite. It's apparent. I know the Giants are a very struggling ball club right now, but they just outscored the Dodgers in the first two games of the season, 17-2.
Right.
I mean, this is a good ball club. The great young pieces, Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, Corey Seager. You still have the veteran presence of Justin Turner. You add guys like Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, Dustin May, who's going to be probably a part of that rotation throughout the duration of this season. I like the Dodgers out of the NL.
Yeah, the gap between the Dodgers and the second best team in the NL is much bigger than the gap between the Yankees and the second best team in the AL. because arguably I would say the Braves are probably the second best team in the NL this year. And the Braves are probably, you know, any given season, probably a 92 to 96 win team, right? That's pretty good. But the Dodgers are like 105, like 100 to 105. And that's a pretty big difference there. So, yeah, the Dodgers are the clear favorite to me. And that's where I think the NL is most interesting, because it means that the middle pack, that second tier, third tier teams, there's a lot of teams in there, right? A lot of teams in the NL Central. You talk about the Reds, the Cardinals, Cubs, Brewers, Braves, Nationals, Mets, Phillies. You know, even throw the Padres in there, maybe the Diamondbacks. I mean, there's 8-10 teams right there kind of competing for the remaining, you know, 7 playoff spots in the NL. And it can get really interesting as who kind of emerges along with LA this year in the NL, Mitch. So let's talk there. Let's talk surprises. What's the team you're keeping your eye on out of the NL?
I mean, there's actually quite a few teams that you could probably say, I'm gonna have the surprise team here.
Yes.
I think the easy one for me, the easy one is the Atlanta Braves.
Okay.
I love the combination of Ronald Acuna Jr., Marcell Ozuna, Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, Ender Inciarte, Charlie Culberson got added to that team. Nick Markakis, who I think is actually sitting out this year, so I won't even mention him. Dansby Swanson. I mean, this is a team with a ton of talent on it. And not to mention that Mike Soroka kind of rose to be one of those top tier pitchers at the end of last year. This is a team that could put it all together and make a run, I think, and get into an NLCS. I love the young Braves.
Yeah, you know, the Braves were a team I considered. I didn't look at them as much as a surprise, though, because I view them as like the second best team in the league. Now, if they beat the Dodgers, it would definitely be surprising. But I was looking a little lower down the totem pole, if you will. So I'm actually going with a team that you picked to go to the World Series last season, Mitch. The Philadelphia Phillies.
Mm.
And the Phillies are a very talented team who just, you know, just couldn't quite put it together last year. They weren't bad, 81-81, but not what you expected when they added the pieces that they did, namely Bryce Harper. But now they go into a shortened 60-game season this year, and you talk about names, talent in the lineup. Bryce Harper, as I mentioned, Reese Hoskins, JT Realmuto, Didi Gregorius, Andrew McCutchen with an opportunity to kind of bounce back here, Jay Bruce moving over to a DH role. And that's a very talented lineup. And then you look at the pitching. Aaron Nola as the one. You're asking what's the caveat for the Phillies is the pitching. And behind Nola, what are you getting from Zach Wheeler, Jake Arrieta, right? It would not shock me if one of those guys emerged as a solid, really good number two guy in a rotation. And if you have a decent third and those two at the top with that lineup, this is a team I think that could be very dangerous. And again, a team that you picked to go to the World Series last year, we obviously know how talented they are and the potential that they have. So I'm going with the Phillies as my surprise team, a team that we're not really thinking about, talking about, that could pop into the NLCS.
Yeah, I mean, and even look at the back end of that rotation, it's still Vince Velasquez and Zach Eflin.
Yeah.
Pretty good pieces to have at the back end of the rotation, too.
No, not bad at all.
Let's not forget about Scott Kingery, too, a guy that's probably going to be a platoon guy behind Didi Gregorius, going to be a great guy to come off the bench. So.
Yeah, 100%. Let's go to the AL, Mitch. Who is your surprise team in the AL?
I got to go with my boys.
I knew it.
I got to go with my boys, the Oakland Athletics. Look, they're primed. This is a team that with a bunch of young talent, a bunch of they have some veteran pieces there like Chris Davis and Marcus Semien. This is a young talent team that can make a run there. They have the bullpen pieces. They have a good starting lineup, especially when you look at the guys in the corners, the two Matts, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson. This is a team that is built to win in the short run. The A's have kind of built that team around that philosophy for a long time, winning when it mattered. And this was a team that won 90 plus games last year. And I really like the A's going into this shortened season.
I think the Angels could be a team to make a real run. So I'm going with the Angels.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I love the manager. Joe Maddon is a great spot there. By the way, was a base coach for the Angels when they last won a World Series in 2002.
Hey, so, there you go. Good old Tim Salmon.
Tim Salmon. Tim Salmon, Garrett Anderson, Troy Gloss.
Oh, man.
That was a good Darren one. Darren Erstad.
Oh,
Darren
wow.
Erstad. There's some good names on there.
Holy cow.
David Eckstein. That was some good players there. But, the pitching definitely needs help. Absolutely. I just look at this lineup as there's Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon and then washed up guys. I'm not a believer in Anderson Simmons anymore. I mean, great glove, but never been great with the bat. Justin Upton seems to be on the backside of his career. Jason Castro has been a guy that's who's been highly touted, but has never really fully proven himself. I need to see something out of them. And,
sure.
I mean, obviously you believe that they'll be there. But
I think they could. I'm not saying they will. I'm saying that they're a team that I'm gonna take the over on them. You know, I'm gonna say they're gonna be better than expected. That's what I'm saying. And maybe that's good enough to make a little run in the playoffs. I think in this year, we don't really know what's going to happen. So I look at a team like this with that much top-end talent. Same with the Phillies. Really similar situation. A lot of top-end talent. You know, if the pieces hit right and if the pitching's good enough, they could really, you know, in this kind of environment, you score enough runs in the playoffs, you're just going to win games. So if these are good enough lineups that are just drilling and you've got Rendon and Mike Trout, I mean, I talked about Bellinger and Betts, but damn, that's a good one too. You know, and that could be a lot. That could be enough in a couple playoff series, you know, to get a win, I think.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Anything else with baseball, Mitch, we want to talk about here? Other than we're just very excited and it feels great to be back?
I think that's about it for me, man.
How did it look for you? You watched some games. How did it feel? Did it feel like baseball? Did it feel weird?
It wasn't weird, but it was different. It was different. It felt like you're watching with an empty stadium. Let's put it that way. I know the cardboard cutouts and the sounds, they're trying to make it like simulate the thing of a full crowd there, but it didn't feel like it. It was cool, but you know, I was just happy to see live baseball. I was just happy to see baseball back. I mean, it didn't feel weird. It just felt different.
You know, I will say this, Mitch. It did seem really different at first, but I'm not gonna lie. Like, come sixth, seventh inning, and I was like kind of paying attention, and I was just like listening, and it sounded like I didn't even realize that there were no fans there. Like the sound, I thought the sound, the MLB the Show sound that they're using in the stadiums, I thought it would bug me. It didn't actually bug me. In fact, I got used to it. In fact, I enjoy it because it feels like a baseball game. You know, and if you shut your eyes and you listen, like, you wouldn't even notice. Now, you open your eyes and you see no fans, sure, but it feels like it sounds like a baseball game, which I liked that, because you're not going to make it look like a baseball game because there's just no fans. It's not going to look like it. But if you can get everything else right, if you can get everything else feeling like it's normal baseball, you've kind of bridged the gap there. So I got used to it for sure, and it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, playoffs is what'll get weird. And you get to a World Series and there's no fans, and that's when you know we really start noticing fans at playoffs and stuff. Like that'll be different, and that'll be
hopefully,
tough.
And hopefully we're past that by then. I don't think so, but hopefully we're in a spot where maybe we can have at least some fans there. So
yeah, perhaps you know, I never really know at this point. Things change so quickly.
Daily.
In this world that we live in now. So all right, Mitch, you are ready to do some Forgotten All Stars here then?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, I'll let you go first. How about that?
All right, sounds good. So, in the spirit of baseball being back, we're going to go baseball here with this player.
Oh,
so
nice.
Little reminder for everyone, maybe you're a new listener, maybe you forgot how we're doing this. Me and Dallin are both picking a player that was a forgotten all-star, so an all-star you may or may not have forgotten about. And then we're going to give three clues to each other, and it's our job to guess the player that the other person picked. So that's how we're formatting Forgotten All-Star here. Like I said, my player is going to be in baseball. So you ready to go, D?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Clue number one. I recorded an ERA under 2 for the better part of 3 years in a row. Clue number two is before my 3-year stretch of dominance, I was a starter. And number three, my nickname was Lights Out.
I don't know, man. Let me think. It sounds like it's a reliever. I just gotta take a guess. I don't know, man. Eric Gagne. That's not right.
That is dead on.
What?
That is dead on. Holy crap. How'd you do that?
Here I was being like, oh, man, I got nothing. Oh, my goodness. I'm the king.
Stab in the dark.
I'm the king.
Shot from the Lights Out. Oh, my God. Yeah, Lights Out. Eric Lights Out Gagne is the forgotten all-star for this week. Yep, Dallin, you were dead nuts on Eric Gagne. Lights Out Eric Gagne. Played from 1999 to 2008. Only a 10-year career. But from 2002 to 2004, he was an all-star, recording 52, 55, and 45 saves each year, respectively. This guy was finishing 67 games in 2003. And finished 68 in 2002. I mean, this guy was unbelievable. From 2002 to 2004, he had a 1.97, 1.20, and 2.19 ERA, respectively. So for the better part of 3 years, he was under 2 for his ERA. The guy was just a fantastic. I mean, I remember as a kid playing Little League, and I was a pitcher. I have terrible eyesight. I had to wear the rec specs.
And you had the goggles.
I had the goggles, so I went for a little Eric Gagne vibe there because that was one of the top guys when I was playing Little League. So I wore the goggles, and so it was a little bit of Eric Gagne vibe. So he was one of those guys that helped me not feel like a nerd on the field when I was wearing the goggles because he wore them too. So, Eric
That's
Gagne.
Cute, Mitch. Look at you.
And Eric Gagne. A Cy Young winner, I will add. One of the few Cy Young relief pitchers. One of the few guys that has...
I didn't remember that he won a Cy Young.
Yeah. He won the Cy Young in 03.
Wow.
He was Cy Young and 6th in MVP voting as a closer.
6th in MVP? Oh, my goodness.
This guy, I mean, that was the year, though. I mean... You look at his statistics in 2003, 55 saves, 1.20 ERA.
Oh, incredible.
82 and a third innings pitched, while striking out 137 batters and only walking 20. Wow. I mean, this was just a dominant year for Eric Gagne, the Canadian-born right-hander. Eric Gagne.
That's incredible. Wow, great one, Mitch. And I can't believe I accidentally got it right.
That was a great stab. I honestly thought you were going to go K-Rod at first.
I thought that would have been my second guess, probably.
I thought you were going to go K-Rod because one of my clues I was actually going to put up was I only have 187 career saves, which is one of those weird things about Eric Gagne right. You may or may not know. But that would have given it away because K-Rod has like 500 career saves.
True.
That would have given it away. But
all right. Well, great, yeah. Great list, Mitch. Let's see if I, let's see how you do on mine. All right. Here's what I got.
All right.
Here's what I got. Forgotten All-Star. I went baseball as well.
Okay.
Okay. So, I am a modern day player. So I currently play Major League Baseball. I am a pitcher in the NL East.
Okay.
And I am famous for my look.
Oh, famous for your look. Oh, boy. NL East, famous for your look. So, like, crazy hair, tattoos, that type of look?
I mean,
or
if that's,
look
if that's,
as in,
that's his look, then maybe.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay, let's think here. NL East. It's not going to be Syndergaard, right?
Is that a guess?
You got to guess. I'm thinking out loud to myself.
I can't answer that question unless it's a formal guess, Mitch.
Okay. All right. Fine. Okay. All right. No. Not at all. Guys that are still active in the NL East, known for their look. Chris Archer?
Nope.
No, wait. He's NL Central. God damn it. That doesn't work. Okay, so I blew that one. Let's go with Felix Hernandez.
Nope.
All right, so I'm down to my third guess.
Oh, yeah. Do you want a hint?
Sure.
If I give you a hint, it's probably going to give it away.
Let's hear it. It may not. It may not.
Okay, he's
man.
Got a... I don't know how to give this hint without giving it away, Mitch. I'm not
going to
lie.
Well, that's part of the game. You got to get something.
I don't know, man. Okay. There are other... I don't know how to say... Mitch, if I say this hint, I'm just going to give it away. I'm just going to 100% give it away.
Okay.
I feel like I've given you quite a bit. You gave me just any pitcher that had less than a 2 ERA. You didn't
You've
say they
done
were a closer,
that to me
but
before
you hinted
with NBA,
they were a closer.
Though. Oh, come on.
I told
You've
you
done that
they're a modern player in the division at a position with a infamous look.
I
believe in you, my friend.
Okay, fine. I don't want it then. I don't want it.
I believe in you.
Don't give it to me. I mean, you've done that to me with basketball, and I've been, you know, screwed on that before. So I don't know why you're throwing.
I believe
such a
in
fit.
You. I believe in you. I don't want to just give you the answer. If I give you a hint, it'll give you the answer.
Oh God, I know I'm gonna feel like an idiot when I don't know it.
You 100% are.
Known for his look in the NL East.
Yeah, and he's a pitcher. Oh, come on, man. Don't overthink it. Shoot from the hip.
Is it Jake Arrieta? I don't know.
Jake Arrieta, bitch. What does Jake Arrieta look like?
He looks like a guy with a big beard and tattoos.
Like what? I've never once thought in my head, oh, that the Jake Arrieta look. It's classic. Mitch, you asked me if this guy was the right answer. It's Noah Syndergaard, bro. Come on.
Oh my God. Come on.
What am I supposed to say to that? Is it Noah Syndergaard? I don't know. Is that a formal guess? Because if I tell you yes, the game's
that
over.
That seems too easy. It just seemed too easy. You played the game with me.
You overthinked it, bro. Like I said, if I gave you a hint, it would have just gave it away. If I gave you a hint, it would have just made it obvious that was the guy you're talking about. Yes, Noah Syndergaard. What is crazy about this, Mitch? Which is why I chose
it. You could have said I'm associated with a superhero. You could have said that.
But then again, like, okay, name another pitcher in the NL East that's associated with a superhero, Mitch. Nobody. I just gave it away if I said
Zach Superman Wheeler.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly. I didn't want to just give the answer. Anyway, the point is, the reason why I brought this up is we all know how talented Noah Syndergaard is. He is only a one-time All-Star in a short career so far, but 5 seasons in the majors, only 1 All-Star in 2016. Pretty crazy to think about. This guy, as talented as he is, has yet to reach another All-Star game. He had a shot 2017. He did not play 7 games. 25 games in 2018, though, 13-4. 3.03 ERA, not an All-Star, though. So a young player who I think, you know, you and I would look at as, you know, one of the better young pitchers in the league. But only a one-time All-Star, which is pretty surprising.
Oh, definitely. With as dominant as he's been, yeah, absolutely. It's surprising that he's been only a one-time All-Star.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mitch, that's our forgotten All-Stars there.
I see how you play this game, Dylan.
What is that supposed to mean?
I guessed him already, and you went, oh, is that a fair
You didn't guess him. You asked me, is it him?
Is it
and I said,
Noah
I don't know. Is
I
that
asked
a,
you, is it
I
Noah
said,
Syndergaard?
I don't know. Is that a formal guess? I asked
I
you
asked
to guess
you,
it, and
is
then
it
you
Noah
chose
Syndergaard,
not to guess it.
And you
it.
Went, huh? Is it?
But Mitch, how am I supposed Come to on. Answer that question? Was that a guess? Because you had three other guesses after that.
No, you're playing mind games with me. Because then what you're going, you "Is that a formal
games?
Guess?"
Mitch.
And I'm like, "Oh shit, okay."
What
now
am
I
supposed to say?
Because that can't that can't be right. That's too easy.
What am I supposed to say there? Yes. The game's over. You've won.
I asked, and you said yes. If I asked, yeah, exactly. Then yes,
no,
I won.
That wasn't it. I asked you, "Is that a formal guess?" Because you have to you have to give it as a guess if I'm going to tell you.
Okay, so if you said Eric Gagne and I was like, "Is that a formal guess?"
Yes, and I would have been like, and I would have said, "Yes, it is a formal guess." And then you would have been like, "You got it right. Congratulations, buddy."
All right, I see how you play this. It's fine.
I'm not playing mind games, Mitch. I'm following
rules. No, we're going to play
There's
mind games from now on.
There's a structure to this.
Dylan, we're playing games now. All right. Now. Okay.
I pull one out of my ass with Eric Gagne, and you get the most obvious answer and can't get it right. Now you're mad at me. I get it.
Pulling out
I get
of your
it.
Ass it's, Eric Gagne.
It's fine.
Get out of here.
Do you want to talk NBA?
I guess so.
All right, we're gonna wrap.
Sorry, is that a formal question? Is that a formal question?
No, screw you, man. Screw you, man. Yeah, it's too early for this shit, Mitch.
It's now 11:15 my time.
Now we're
warmed
up.
Time,
now
so
we're warmed up. It's
been
an hour.
Early.
We're ready to go. NBA begins on Thursday with a doubleheader: Jazz, Pelicans, and then Lakers, Clippers. The NBA announced that their regular season awards for 2019-2020 will be based on the season that ended on March 12th and will not include the bubble, the eight bubble games before the playoffs. So voting has commenced for the NBA awards. Will end mid next week, I believe. And then in August, in a couple weeks, we'll find out the winners. Because of that, we wanted to take a look at the season and give you our thoughts on who we think should win these awards. MVP, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, etc. So, Mitch, let us begin. Let's start with MVP, Mitch. It's either Giannis or LeBron. But who is it, Mitch? Who's your MVP?
My MVP is Giannis. I mean, I think you can make the most compelling case for him. Now, when we were talking the other day and we were hanging out talking, there is definitely a big case to be made for LeBron. But Giannis has been so close, and he's been such a huge part of this team's success over Milwaukee that I don't see it slipping out of grasp for him again. This has got to be Giannis's year. You look at his pre-March 12th numbers, 29.6 points a game. He's averaging 13.7 rebounds a game. It's the guy's just been outstanding. 5.8 assists a game, excuse me. This guy's just been, he's been the catalyst, the key piece to this Bucks team's success, where LeBron has other pieces around him. And not to say that Giannis doesn't have other pieces around him, but, LeBron has higher profile pieces around him. So I got to give it to Giannis here. I think that there is a narrative that you could write where LeBron does win MVP, but I got to give it to Giannis.
You know, Mitch, I went with Giannis as well for MVP. And we talked about the LeBron thing. You mentioned it. LeBron has had the best season of any player at age 35 or older ever in NBA history. What he's done is incredible. Leading the league in assists at over 10 a game as a forward, averaging 24 points a game, maybe 25 a game as, again, 35 years old, as the main facilitator, is incredible and extremely impressive. And again, I could understand if somebody voted for LeBron. But ultimately, I think Giannis is the vote because he has had a historically great season on a team that has been the best team in the NBA all year. You mentioned his stats. Just 13.7 rebounds and 29.6 points a game, Mitch.
Yeah.
Dude's averaging 30 and almost 14 on top of 5.8 assists and a steal and a block. It's incredible. Giannis is incredible, and he deserves. Giannis is going to get to the point where he's going to be like LeBron, where you could probably give him the MVP every year, and other guys will win it, and Giannis will have better seasons, but other guys will win it because we're going to get tired of giving Giannis MVPs. But now is not the time. He is still the new hot young thing, and he is doing incredible stuff on the basketball court. So Giannis is my MVP pick this year. Now, LeBron's definitely second. I think other guys in the mix there, you've got to mention Luka Doncic in that conversation to me. You've got to mention Damian Lillard in that conversation. He's always an MVP caliber guy in my mind. Even though Portland's not the best team, I still think he deserves to be in that conversation. There's some guys floating around there, you know, easy to throw a James Harden, that kind of stuff in there. But ultimately, this is a two-man race between LeBron and Giannis, and Giannis is the clear pick.
Something, just while we're on the MVP talk, someone I saw that I thought might be interesting to throw into this one that ESPN threw in was Chris Paul. I was interested to hear your take on that.
I disagree.
Me too. Okay.
Listen, Chris Paul has been great.
Yeah, I agree.
But MVP is a stretch.
Very
MVP
big
is a big stretch for me.
Yep.
Yeah. But he's been nonetheless impressive.
Yeah, very impressive.
So let's talk Defensive Player of the Year, Mitch, because Giannis is another guy heavily considered for Defensive Player of the Year. You've kind of got him, Rudy Gobert, the two-time defending Defensive Player of the Year, and then Anthony Davis, who's really emerged this season. Of those three, Mitch, who did you go for? Who did you go with for Defensive Player of the Year?
You know, I went with Giannis again. I kind of wanted to mix things up and go with Anthony Davis, but I have to go with Giannis again. Now, look, there's only been two players in NBA history that have won Defensive Player of the Year and MVP in the same year. That's MJ in 1988 and Hakeem Olajuwon in 1994. Giannis is one of those generational type players that I think that he's going to be able to do it. Like, I mean, if there's someone to break that mold and become the third guy to do that ever, it's going to be Giannis. Anthony Davis has had a great defensive season. But again, what Giannis has meant to that team on both sides of the court has been unprecedented throughout the entire year. I got to give Giannis Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, Mitch, I went with Giannis as well to be the MVP Defensive Player of the Year. And I think Gobert and Davis have an argument. And I understand the Davis hype. I think there are two things with the Davis hype. Actually, three things. This is what I got to say about this, Mitch. Gobert has been a better defensive player this year than Anthony Davis. I 100% believe that. I believe that people want Anthony Davis, you know, more than Gobert because, one, he's a new name. Gobert is a back-to-back defending defensive player of the year. Again, I talked about this with the Giannis MVP thing. At a certain point, you just want to vote in somebody new, right? You just want to give the award to somebody else. And they're deserving nonetheless, but you want to give it to somebody else. So I think that's part of it with Gobert. And two, Davis now on the Lakers. Lakers, a huge market team. The Jazz, not. So I think this narrative that Davis deserves the award over Gobert, I don't agree with that at all. I watch a lot of Lakers and I watch a lot of Jazz. Rudy Gobert is arguably the best defensive player of the year every single year. The way that the Jazz have built a team around his defensive skills, the way they rely on him to anchor a defense and they fit their entire team around him is incredible. And there's no other player like that other than Giannis. So I'm not buying the Davis hype, though I agree that he should be in the conversation. But ultimately, I think this is Giannis. And Gobert, again, has been fantastic, but Is he three-time? I don't know. He would have had to do something really remarkable, really take his game to a huge next level to win it, you know, three times in a row. So I felt fine voting for Giannis, and Giannis as MVP and Defensive Player of the Year is, as you said, historic and well-deserved.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Rudy Gobert thing for me, voters are people too, and I think that sometimes emotions come into play when it comes to voting. And I think that Rudy Gobert with this whole NBA shutdown thing, him kind of being labeled as the catalyst for the shutdown,
being the scapegoat for it all,
it might have some effect in that voting, which is why I put Davis above Gobert.
And that sucks, by the
way.
It does
suck.
I think that's stupid and unwarranted.
It's unwarranted.
Because Gobert, we probably talked about this when this happened, but Gobert did something foolish. It's not a smart idea during, you know, what we weren't taking a pandemic seriously. And obviously to do that, inappropriate. But it wasn't dangerous. It wasn't reckless. It wasn't abhorrent. It was just stupid. And I hope that he doesn't get negatively affected because of that. Because ultimately it's a stupid thing. And there are many players in the NBA who do much more stupid things that are much more consequential and you know, don't get the same sort of
action. Deion Waiters. So. Take gummies on a flight.
Yeah. How about Lou Williams, who just dipped out of the Orlando bubble to go to a strip club in Atlanta and claimed that it was because they have the best food and he just missed the food. And now he has to quarantine for 10 days and miss the start of the season.
Hey.
As a jackass for a title contending team, but he's not going to get nearly as shit on as Rudy Gobert did for touching Mike. I don't know. I hate that.
I heard that strip club that he went to had great poutine and chicken strips. So...
Magic City? Hey, Magic City's the one. You listen to rap music, man. You've heard of Magic City.
Yeah.
That is mentioned by all the guys. So
they have the best.
Apparently, they have the best wings and probably the best other things.
Best food of all the strip clubs in town, for sure. Right. But, yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate, but I think that, unfortunately, voters are human beings, too, and I think that might take effect here. So,
yeah, we'll see. No doubt. Mitch, let's talk Rookie of the Year. This to me was easy. This is John Morant, and there's no question. And Zion, as great as he was in his limited sample size, needed more games. And had they been able to play the full 82, and he continued to be as dominant as he was, and continued to play every game, you know, after 30, 40 games, maybe you could have made an argument. But John Morant was really, really good this year. Despite, you know, not talking games played, like even if Zion plays the whole year. I mean, John Morant had 17.6 points a game and 6.9 rebounds, has his team as an eighth seed in a very competitive Western Conference, a Memphis team with Taylor Jenkins and Brandon Clark and all these young players in a rebuild, and they might find themselves in the playoffs. That's a huge story, and that's a huge win, and it's propelled by Ja Morant. So Ja Morant to me is by far deserving of this. This wasn't even a question.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you shoot as well as he did from the field, I mean, like you said, 17.6 points per game, 6.9 assists per game, 3.5 rebounds a game. This guy on a team that probably shouldn't have even been sniffing the playoffs and they're in that situation that they are in now. While also starting every game as a rookie. I mean, like you said, the sample size was Zion was just too small. It's just way too small. Yeah. And I don't think even if he came back 30 games into the year, you could really make...
It wouldn't have been enough.
It wouldn't have been enough. Yeah. He had to have played as much as John Morant did. And John Morant was just more durable and played more than he did. So John Morant's the easy choice here. If he doesn't get it, it's taken away from the genuineness of the MVP award, and it's now become a popularity contest because John Morant should be winning this award.
No doubt. And I hope people don't compare this to the 16-17 season where Malcolm Brogdon won Rookie of the Year over Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid was a much better player, but again, only played like 30, 35 games that year. And Brogdon was pretty good, but he wasn't great. And this is not the same situation because Ja Morant has been great.
Oh, he's been fantastic.
So it's not like we're just, you know, handing the award to somebody else because Zion didn't play enough games. Like Ja Morant deserves the award for what he did this year. And again, if Zion is averaging 20-7 over the same amount of games, well then yeah, he's the rookie of the year. But you know, it's like, let's not pretend that Ja Morant doesn't deserve this. And that he's just getting it because Zion didn't play enough. The John Morant was extremely impressive this year. The kid's going to be an all-star guard next season in his second season, I would predict. He is a rising star in the NBA and deserves this, and good for him.
Like, but let's also clear up the maybe false narrative people are writing, is that if Zion played a full year, Ja would still win MVP because the pace that Zion is on right now is unprecedented. Like, this guy, if he was playing a full season, he would be winning the MVP right now.
No doubt. And like I said, like if he's averaging 20-7 like he was over the same amount of games, then it's easy.
Right.
That guy is the rookie of the year.
But Jaws, yeah. Even not, but not Jaws, not even away. That far behind, though, even with what he's averaging. No, so.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's not fantastic. To take away anything from John Morant.
Yeah.
Exactly. No doubt, Mitch. All right, Rookie of the Year. So far, we are on the same page. Let's go Coach of the Year.
Okay.
Everyone's favorite. Everyone's favorite. Mitch. Everyone's got hot takes on Coach of the Year. What do you? What are your thoughts here?
Look, when I look at the different coaches that have coached great teams here, I mean, you look at Eric Spoelstra doing what he's done in Miami. Taylor Jenkins has done a great job in Memphis. Mike Budenholzer, obviously, with all the talent that he has in Milwaukee, is fantastic. But I'm going to go with Nick Nurse in Toronto. Yep. Look, you lose a top three player in the league in Kawhi Leonard, and you're still able to put together the season that you have. That's just he's done an unbelievable job coaching those guys. Nick Nurse should be the runaway in my mind.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I mean, the Toronto Raptors are second in the East after they lost Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. I mean, those are obviously Kawhi, but Danny Green, a very integral part of what made them so successful last year. And they relied on young guys like Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam to really take leaps. But both players did. And both stepped into a bigger role. And because of that, the team has continued to win and succeed. Nick Nurse is an incredible young head coach. Obviously, they won a title last year. And he loses his best player, like you said, a top three, top five player in the league, and still puts up the regular season that they did. Fantastic. I mean, and you mentioned guys that are all also deserving of a mention and a look. 100% agree with you. Billy Donovan,
yeah.
OKC, definitely deserves a look as well because I had OKC as the worst in the West this year. I expected them to be really bad, partially because I thought Chris Paul would get traded. But nonetheless, they keep him, and they're in the hunt for a 4 or 5, maybe even a 3 seed in the West. I mean, it's incredible. So Billy Donovan deserves a look as well, but this is easy. Nick Nurse gets this
one. So I want to know your suggestion here because of all the names that we've mentioned, we haven't mentioned Frank Vogel yet. Why is he not in the top of that conversation, do you think?
He should be. He should be. And because, yes, he has AD and LeBron, and that's going to disqualify him because they're too good. But, I mean, this was a team that had never really played together. Think about how many new pieces they brought in this year. Different personalities. I mean, we're talking about the all-time NBA meme team, right?
Right.
And he got them to be as good as they were, as dominant as they were in the West, with a 35-year-old LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Rajon Rondo, and JaVale McGee, and Dwight Howard, who's been great. I mean, he's really – Alex Caruso, who's been great. I mean, they have really done – he's done a lot with some of these pieces, and he doesn't get enough credit. And it's the LeBron factor, Mitch, because every team that LeBron has been on, the coach has always been overlooked and has always been the one to blame when things go wrong. And when things go right, LeBron gets the credit.
Yeah.
But he definitely deserves more credit here, and he should be in the conversation.
Yeah, Frank Vogel, and I think Doc Rivers even too deserve a little bit of recognition here. But
yeah, no doubt. All right, let's go six man here, Mitch. Are we going to disagree at some point?
Man, we might. I don't know.
Okay, well, what do you got for six man?
Sorry, I'm up. I got to pull it up. six man. Look, Montrezl Harrell, I think, was the easy pick, but I went with Lou Williams in this pick.
Okay.
Look, I mean, this 18.7, or sorry, I got to pull this up. Crap, where'd it go? Yeah, 18.7 points a game off the bench with 5.7 assists and 3.1 rebounds. Off the bench! Off the bench! Lou Williams doing it off the bench. Obviously, yeah, he went to go get some bomb-ass chicken strips at a strip club recently, but the guy's played fantastic throughout the entire year. He's been a great piece for the Clippers off the bench, and I don't see any reason why he shouldn't win it. Now, obviously, he has a teammate that has been just as good off the bench for him, obviously playing different positions, but I really like what Lou Williams has done off the bench, and so I think he's going to get the sixth man, or he should, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Lou Will is a perennial sixth man candidate.
He's the Bobby Jackson of this generation.
He's the sixth man of sixth mans. Yeah. I mean, Drake said it in a song. He called sixth man like Lou Will. Like, that's just should be the Lou Williams Award. But Montrezl Harrell definitely has an argument. He's been arguably better off the bench for the Clippers. I think another guy who should get more credit, who I've seen kind of floated around, but a guy who should be in the conversation, maybe not win it, but should be in the voting, is a guy, Jordan Clarkson, for the Jazz. He's been really good off the bench for the Jazz. But I'm not going with any of those.
Oh.
I'm going with a player for the Oklahoma City Thunder, Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, yeah.
On a surprise Oklahoma City Thunder team, and part of it is their guard play. You've got Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the starting lineup, but then Schroeder coming off the bench and then closing games, being a part of a three-guard lineup that has been so potent for Oklahoma City this year. Check out these stats from Schroeder this year. He's averaging 19 points a game and 4 assists off the bench.
Yeah.
19 points a game off the bench, shooting 38% from three. That's incredible. That is very impressive. And Lou Will, always in the conversation. Harrell, definitely too. But I don't think Schroeder's getting enough credit here, especially considering how good this Oklahoma City team has been and what we may have expected from them this season. They've been much better than we expected, and part of that credit needs to go to Schroeder. And I think he should get rewarded with that by getting the Sixth Man of the Year award. So that's who I'm going with.
Yeah, I like that pick. I mean, he had a lot of great years off the bench for the and I think he started some games too for the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, he had some great years there for him too. But to do actually, and I'm looking at the year in particular, 2017-2018, he actually started 67 games for the Hawks and averaged 19.4. Now he's averaging 19 points a game off the bench.
Off the bench.
For the Thunder. So, yeah. There's a solid point there that you made. He's doing this off the bench, and I like the pick. I think Montrezl Harrell will end up maybe even third in this voting because of the production of the other guys that are coming off the bench. I mean, not to take anything away from what he's done, but you know, there are some guys that are getting overlooked here. Definitely.
Yeah, there's a lot of quality sixth man candidates, I think, this year.
Derrick Rose.
Honestly, though, Mitch, I think Harrell will win it. I think Montrezl Harrell's the favorite.
Yeah.
Because of, again, the Lou Will, it goes to the same thing we were talking about before. You just don't want to vote the same guy over and over again. It gets boring.
23 points a game off the bench, yeah, I get it. But
Montrezl Harrell is an exciting new name to vote for, and he deserves it, rightfully. I mean, all these guys are deserving, so he would be a great candidate. I think he's the favorite. I personally think he's probably the favorite to win.
I just don't like his name.
Wow. All right.
Weird L at the end. I don't like the weird L at the end.
It just throws you off.
It throws me off.
Like, just be Montrez, please.
Yeah,
thank
can
you.
We just be Montrez, not Montrezl?
All right, let's wrap this with most improved player, Mitch.
Okay.
And this one's easy. There are a lot of names, most improved player. A lot of worthy candidates.
Okay.
There's one guy. One guy who this award should go to, and that's Brandon Ingram.
Wow.
Brandon Ingram, who averaged 24 points a game, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists in his fourth season, his first with the Pelicans. Last season, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He improved in every statistical category, in steals, in blocks per game. He's been incredible. Thought 38% from three. He averaged 1.8 threes attempted last year. This year, 6.3. Increased the amount of threes that he's shooting and obviously shot them at a productive rate. Like, he's been incredible. He was an all-star this year. There's nobody else in my mind. There are people who deserve to be in the conversation. Nobody else deserves the award other than Brandon Ingram. That's how I feel.
You know, I think a lot of people are going to think Bam Adebayo right off the bat, because he's shown a lot of improvement. And he's
true.
On the winning team. He's on a winning team. And I think that's what people are going to vote for. But I 100% agree with you. It's Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
I mean, 24.3 points a game compared to his 16.2% or 16.2 points per game over his career. That is an 8.1 points per game higher than his career average. A lot of people are going to look at the fact that, like, oh, he can't contribute that much because, you know, they were 9-26 without Zion, And then the Pelicans were 19-10 with Zion. Well, yeah, he kept them afloat enough because if he hadn't put up 24.3 points a game, they probably wouldn't even be in the playoff conversation. Even though
they wouldn't be in the bubble.
They wouldn't be
they
in
wouldn't
the
have
bubble.
Been invited.
Even though they only won 9 games without Zion, they probably wouldn't even be in the bubble if this guy hadn't stepped up. So, this guy, I mean he's shooting just under 40% from 3, which obviously could be a little bit better, but he's not a three-point shooter.
League average is 36.
So,
if you shoot over 36, you're good.
He's shooting right about just a tick over league average. This guy he's been fantastic the whole year. And he, like you said, he has improved in every statistical category. If you look over his career, he is playing more minutes. He is shooting better from the field. He is shooting better from the free throw line. He has more rebounds, more assists, more blocks, more steals, and more points per game than ever in his career, over his career averages. This guy is definitely the most improved player, and it's not even close.
No doubt. And you mentioned Bam Adebayo, and definitely a guy deserving of a look here. But what was Bam? The difference between those two is that Bam Adebayo has Jimmy Butler on his team to be the guy.
Brandon Ingram has nobody.
But guess who the guy was for New Orleans this year? Brandon Ingram. He was asked to be the guy. And guess what he did? Averaged 24 points a game and made an all-star team as the guy. And yeah, they didn't win a bunch of games, but you can't blame Brandon Ingram for that because clearly the kid balled out and did all he could do to keep them in games. So there's just no question here that Brandon Ingram deserves a look. As a guy who's been overlooked his entire career, you had the Ben Simmons-Ingram immediate comparisons. He wasn't great in L.A. Things didn't go super well. He was better last year, obviously, 18 points a game last year. Gets traded to New Orleans, still overlooked. And here he does drop 24 points a game and make an all-star team. He deserves to be most improved player by far. And it's exciting for him because I always thought, When the Lakers drafted him number 2 overall, I thought that he would be successful. I thought it might take a minute, and it definitely did, but he had the type of raw talent, the type of athleticism to be a very good player in the NBA. And it's super exciting to see him fulfilling that potential and really coming to his own here in New Orleans. And a great pairing with Zion Williamson. I even think Lonzo Ball, who improved a lot this year too, should also arguably be in this conversation. The Pelicans are set up in a really good spot, and it's exciting, and I'm glad for Ingram. I'm happy for him. He had a fantastic season. He deserves to get rewarded.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%.
All right, Mitch, that's it for NBA awards, and I think that's about it for the pod.
That is it, my friend.
Nice little Sunday morning recording, Mitch. How are you? How you feeling about all this?
Oh, I feel great.
Great stuff.
Great stuff. I hope you guys go ahead and give it a listen, because if you want to listen, all you got to do is go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Go ahead and give us a listen. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Tell us we suck. That's the only way we can get better. You can also follow us on our socials at Twitter at Sports Hour Guys, at Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. Guys, also go engage with us on Dallin.
Anchor.
Go. I almost said Audacity. Go.
Go download Audacity.
Go down.
Record yourself.
Send it to
send
us.
Send it over.
Email. But no, it's gonna be a lot easier to reach us on Anchor. Go on Anchor and reach us there. Leave us a voice message. Be a part of the conversation. We want you guys to be a part of the conversation. And we want you to engage with us. We want to engage with you. So go ahead, get on Anchor and engage with us there.
Yeah, no doubt. We appreciate you tuning in to this episode. We should be getting a little more consistent with these as we have sports back, which is, again, as I said previously, a big win for this sports podcast here.
Well,
to have
and once
live sports.
Once NFL starts, we're going to have our weekly picks here.
Oh, yeah, that's when we get into the peak of everything, man. NFL season, that's when you got to be tuned in, subscribed, you know, notifications on for the pod, because we're bringing the heat. We got the
stuff.
Segments, the weekly stuff going down. You don't want to miss.
And you don't want to miss when Dallin starts shaving his head when he loses next year. So,
hilarious, Mitch. I ain't shaving anything.
Yeah, right.
Except for the gross mustache that my wife does not like.
Get rid of that thing.
Mitch, I think that's about it
for
this week. Good talking with you, buddy. We look forward to the NBA restart here this week. May put out an episode, probably a reaction to that, in about a week. And then we both go on vacation. So we'll maybe try to throw something up, next weekend before we leave and after the NBA, after we get some NBA games. And then, after that, we'll be in the thick of it.
Oh.
So we look forward to interacting with you and participating with you here on the Sports Hour. And we'll catch you next week.
See ya.